podcast is brought to you by Gaia Africa, a private members business club for women committed to developing and servicing the top 5% of Africa's lustrous female founders, corporate CEOs, other C-suite executives, professionals, board members, business innovators, and creatives. The five-episode podcast series is sponsored by Pinnacle Oil and Gas, an indigenous oil and gas company active across the entire downstream value chain, with emphasis on petroleum trading, marketing, distribution, and retail segments of the Nigerian oil and gas sector. It's been four different conversations. First, we started off with human capital. Then we talked about creating economic opportunities, leveraging on technology, shaping attitudes. And as we see at the base of all of those things, no matter what we do, if we don't have the right laws to enforce them, it's all, like some people say, babas. So welcome to episode five. My name is Adesuwa Onyenokwe, and in episode five, we are talking about enforcement laws, laws and enforcement and all of that. And I have three very articulate people in the house who are going to drill down on this for us. Very articulate. All these people have doctors and have lawyers. You know how you're growing up, your parents say, you want to be a doctor, you want to be a lawyer. We got it all here. So the first person I'd like to introduce is signing in all the way from London. Hi, Kemi.
Hi, guys. How are you doing?
I'm good. Nice to see you. Kemi Da Silva Ibru is a specialist obstetrician and gynecologist with a medical background that extends to public health. She is also a public health physician and an academician who is currently undergoing a PhD in gender-based violence, that's GBV. As a qualified physician with over 15 years of experience in private practice, she dedicates her time to addressing the needs of expectant mothers and women. She also runs a non-for-profit organization, the Women at Risk International Foundation, WARIF, that successfully tackles the issue of gender-based violence, rape, and trafficking of young girls and women in communities throughout Lagos State and across Nigeria. That sounds good. Doctor, not only in the medical field, but now in GB. Well done, girl.
Thank you.
And I have sitting right across from me here, Mr. Yemi Candid Johnson. Can I add the son, Senior Advocate of Nigeria? It's nice to have you here. You're welcome.
Thank you very much.
You're a senior partner at Strachan Partners. I had to confirm how that sounded. Did I get it right?
Absolutely.
Okay. A leading commercial law firm based in Lagos and Abuja, Nigeria, and has substantial practice across the nation. He was called to the Nigerian bar in July of 1984 and conferred with the rank of Senior Advocate of Nigeria in September 2003. He received his LLM degree from the University of London in 1985, and between 1984 and 1990, he was counsel in the leading chambers of John B. Majiagbe, Senior Advocate of Nigeria in Kano, Nigeria. Yemi is an honorary fellow of the Center for International Legal Studies in Salzburg, Austria, and a supporting member of the London Maritime Arbitration Association. Yemi is a past president of Lagos Court of Arbitration and chairman of the board of Nigeria Mortgage Refinance Company, all of these papers. Ha, welcome on set.
Thank you very much.
Great. Another guest, all of us are doing this podcasting for the first time. It's only you. It's plus me. Zelda had said already, Zelda Akindele is my last guest, and she holds a Master of Laws in Banking and Finance from the London School of Economics and a Bachelor of Laws from the University of Bristol. She is admitted to practice in Nigeria and England and Wales. Zelda has extensive experience advising clients on syndicated lending, leverage acquisition, structures, RBLS, whatever that is, securitization, capital markets, and the bottom line is you're a lawyer and you are a partner in Templar's Finance Practice Group. You're welcome.
Thank you. It's just jargon.
It's just jargon, but it's good. You know, it's good. It's good. Yeah. But really, what is RBLS?
They're RBLs, reserves-based lending. It's something that oil and gas companies do, and they just borrow money against their reserves.
Oh.
It's a special way we do it.
That's great. So, I mean, I'm very pleased that this is happening now. And I think I'll start with Kemi again, because at the base of all of the gap in gender parity is the fact that people say it's cultural and it's home-based. And some of the repercussions of those things is what ends up being gender-based violence. The fact that there is some level of disparity. I wonder if you agree with this.
No, absolutely. I certainly agree with it. When you think of gender-based violence, it relates directly to the gender inequality that exists in our country. If we look at Nigeria, it ranks 118 out of 134 countries on the Gender Equality Index. And when we look at the consequences of this, the various forms of gender-based violence, we see one in four girls before the age of 18 in our country experiencing at least one episode of sexual violence. And we're 200 million people at this year, and half of us are women. And we're a young country, so 64% of us are under the age of 24. We're looking at over 10,000 girls every day subjected to acts of violence as a direct result of this gender gap and the inequality we see.
Okay, I mean, most of the things that I've heard people say, you say this gap, how do we relate this to inability of women to actually express themselves to a point where the report that's the cause for what we're doing here today, the power of parity, right? How can parity change that, do you think?
Well, first of all, we have to look at where we are as women and the representation of women in our environment. I mean, politically, we're all aware that we're underrepresented in government. I mean, there's 7.9% of us in the House of Senate. There's only 3.6% of us in the House of Reps. These are the lowest figures in sub-Saharan Africa. Economically, 60% of us that work in the rural areas are women. When we look at the educational landscape, for instance, 70% of girls in Nigeria attend primary school, but only 10% get to university. If I leave on my OBGYN hat, I'll tell you that our maternal mortality rate, 545 deaths of 100,000 lives, a majority happen to be women. So, I mean, essentially, when you talk about the gender and the gap, you know, from where we are, we have a very long way to go in closing the gap. But until we start to look at it through that lens, I mean, as, you know, reported by, I believe, the UN Secretary General, the change at the pace is going, it's so slow that it'll take approximately a century.
That's right, to write it.
The same quality as other countries.
Great. Thank you so much for holding forte for so long. And I would like to now dive straight into discussing. I want the lawyers in the house to set for me a target that you think Nigerians, what target can Nigeria create to ensure that there are women in political parties? Because, I mean, look at the exact statistics that was just quoted. You know, the representation is so poor. What kind of targets should we be setting to ensure that women are in political parties, ministries, boards, private companies, STEM? Do we set a target for government? And I think I should start with Yemi.
You know, it's an interesting question. And every question requires context. You know, what are we trying to achieve? What is the situation we're confronting? I often quoted is the remark by Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who was asked when she became the second woman to sit on the U.S. Supreme Court. When will there be enough women on the Supreme Court? She said, when there are nine.
All of them, all the seats.
and the foundation of that reasoning is that there's nothing unusual about having nine white men. There's nothing unusual about having eight white men and one black guy. There's nothing unusual about men being the complete complement of that office, which is very high, which is the highest policy court in the United States, which dictates effectively the course of law across many aspects of American society. So in our context, of course, Kemi has talked about the gender-based violence. And I'm sure that because I have two women on this panel, they'll speak about many things, including the disadvantages of having women excluded from the seat of power, the regulation that they bring to boards, that they bring to...
And they are true. Activities.
And they are... I'm sorry?
And they are true.
Correct. So when you bear that in mind, that there is a value to be achieved, then you consider what is the fairness question. The utility question is solved. The fairness question arises as to, so why should so many women be what percentage? If we know that women are 51% of the population, then the fairness question is answered, that why can't we have 50%? But of course, you're dealing with an entrenched, I don't like the word patriarchy, because whenever I mention patriarchy, a woman in the room pointed at me. Of course, this is just unfortunate. But then you have to set targets to restore a balance. And I think that setting targets works. The Rwandans set a target of 30%. But in their House of Representatives, they have 68-point-something% women.
Wow.
And in the Senate, they have 39-point-something%. So the affirmative action has disclosed a value in having a greater number of women in those offices. I think, to be fair, women are very often more reflective, more measured, less prone to explosions of testosterone, which men tend to be. You know, you get into a room with men, they're
jostling.
Yes, they're jostling, exactly. And they're not finding solutions. And you find this, talking about the advantages, if you sit down on a board, if there's a woman in the room, the explosions of irrelevant emotion tend to be mitigated. Men tend to be, in my experience, men tend to behave less badly when there's a woman in the room. I don't know, maybe that's a different experience for you. But then, so I think that the advantage of having women in these spaces is important. But I would say, if you ask me for a figure, I would set, figures may be pointless in many ways, that PDP has a 30%.
That's going to be cool, yeah.
Yeah, nothing has come out of it. They don't reflect the targets they set in their own constitution.
So what does that say about setting targets in the first place then, Zelda?
There you go.
Before I answer that question, I just wanted to pick up on something Yemi said, because it was very interesting to me when you were talking about too much testosterone in the room.
That's and, right.
Because it's the argument usually used to keep women out of those
Absolutely.
Positions, right? Is that they say that we're too emotional, we're hormonal. You know, it was one of the
anger is not an emotion.
Well,
anger is an emotion.
Well, there you go. Of course, but men can
but
be
men
angry.
Don't
that's
consider
what
it, exactly.
Yes.
Men don't consider it an emotion,
yes.
right?
Oh,
so it's very interesting that you talk about how women being in the room when you know have men that are exploding in anger, and it's a calming effect. It's an interesting perspective, and I think it's one that we need to, you know, say a bit louder.
Okay, go ahead.
No, just going back to your question around
That's
targets, right? Controversial view, I'm actually not a fan of targets, because I think that you then run into the risk of tokenism, right? You then have the idea of, but we do have two women in the room. Those women may not necessarily be the most capable women. They may not necessarily bring anything to the table, but we tick the box. We have two women, right? So I'm not necessarily a fan, but like Yemi said, we need targets to restore balance. And the other thing that we need targets for, in a sense, is accountability, right? So even though the PDP is not adhering to its 30%, if we were a serious electorate, we would hold them accountable,
right?
So those are two things that, you know, you kind of need targets for. But where I would go with the targeting wouldn't actually be at that level of politicians, and I'd actually start right at the base, right? So how many girl children are we keeping in primary school? Let's have a target there, right? How many girl children are we exposing to STEM? Science, technology, engineering, maths. Let's have a target there, right? How many women who, when they're done with education, are we actually allowing to go into research fields, or are we enabling to go into research fields? Because those are the women who are then able to occupy the positions. So the target should come a lot earlier, in my view.
So what steps should we take to close that gap? Using law and policy, let's go to Kemi now, because you have worked in a field where law and policy, I don't know how far law and policy has gone in the field of domestic violence, for example. Using that as an example of how far law and policy can go.
Well, with regards to that, I mean, we still have discriminatory laws in Nigeria that reinforce rather than combat gender inequality and gender-based violence. And so the laws that do exist many a time there is difficulty implementing the already existing legal framework. Mm-hmm. The common example that we always cite is the VAP Act, which is the Violence Against Persons Prohibition Law that was implemented in 2015 to tackle all forms of violence. And to date, still only 27 out of 36 states passed the law. And if we even go further with Child Rights Act from 2003, still only 25 states out of 36 states. So there's certainly a need to implement even the existing laws that we already have passed.
So what do the lawyers...
No, I was just going to say, in my opinion, speaking to the lawyers, I think we need more special sexual offences courts
available
for these particular types of cases. Because many a time you have these cases heard in, you know, the public sector or in civil courts, and you know for a fact that there is that difficulty in disclosure, there's lack of sensitivity, and it's very difficult to have survivors stand, you know, and actually tell their story, especially when you're in an environment that's open.
So what do you think about that, you know, special offences courts, Yemi?
You know, if you have an emergency, you create devices to intervene in emergencies. This is where I regard these sort of special courts. You know, you're right, insensitivity. I've seen videos of a three-year-old child who had been a victim of rape being asked questions which I wouldn't allow them to ask a grown-up woman. And this is, there's such a total reckless attitude to investigating, presenting, and prosecuting these sorts of cases. And it's a big problem. And, you know, I was saying when we came on, you know, what I don't know, I don't know. What I do know, I can talk about, but when I have this sort of conversation, it causes me to agonize over things which I don't even have solutions for. So I appreciate this sort of discussion, this exploration, but I feel acutely the injustice that people suffer in these situations, and I recognize it's a big problem that's beyond any particular case. Across our culture, women are objectified and commoditized, and the law, in its being written, is not gender neutral. It's gender favorable to men. The Constitution doesn't mention she or her. You know, the Constitution assumes throughout the body that every important office is going to be held by a man. Of course, the Constitution was never, there were no women in the room when the Constitution was being drafted. And this is a problem across the board, that much of our law, you know, I was in Abuja last week and I went past the Ministry of Women Affairs and just struck me so, I can't use that word, ridiculous, that you'd have, what does the Ministry of Women Affairs do? They distribute materials to widows and rice. You need a minister for equality.
That word is a problem, by the way.
Maybe the word that we use is equity. Because when you say equality, it's like, I mean, there can never really be any equality, but it's equity.
You know, our Constitution doesn't provide for due process or equality under the law. And people assume that it does, because this is something that most constitutions provide for in a positive way. In fact, there's nowhere except in the preamble of our Constitution where the idea of equality is mentioned at all. But why should you concede that you cannot be equal? I don't understand that.
But we don't. What do you mean when you say we don't?
It's a difficult thing. People are considering whether that word, that somehow it'll be okay.
So I don't think, just to take a step back, right? When you look at the entire question around, you know, what can the law do? How can regulation step in to bridge this gap, right? The bigger question is that can law and regulation, to my mind,
can bridge the gap?
Not just bridge the gap, but can it change a sociocultural mindset? Because that's actually the genesis of our problem. All of the things you're talking about. So when I say something like equality, the word equality is a problem, right? One of the infamous anecdotes that came out of the discussions around the gender bill in the Senate is one of the senators, let's not name them, who actually said that one of his issues with the bill was this reference to the word equality, because women are not supposed to be equal. And if that word was replaced, maybe then he could support the bill. And it's actually a big problem in the cultural context in Nigeria, right? Just our sociocultural history and the way that our culture has evolved, it's difficult to appreciate that equality, right?
Can I just add?
Before you guys go on, can we define equality and equity? And they're two different things.
They are two different things.
Equal
They are two different things.
I don't understand.
Yeah, I guess equity means that you will be considered in assigning opportunities. Equality means you have exactly the same rights. Mm.
Equity is more fairness, right?
Yeah.
So more fairness. Well,
equality is, I would say, equal value.
Equity is based on rules.
I'm listening.
Equity is based on recognizing that every person has different circumstances, so therefore the needs allocated to that person will differ.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But equality is a more direct value to predict.
Uh-huh.
And if you want to talk about enforcement, absolutely, you need to find something you can say. Sorry, can you going to say equity?
Sorry, can I agree with you?
Yeah. Yes,
so it's very simple. But so before I forget, you know, you're talking about in the Senate, and never mind, I can't remember the name of the senator from Nassau State who said that.
Yeah.
But even worse was the Senator Abaribe from Abia State.
That was awful.
Could lead to sexual immorality and lesbianism if women were regarded as equal.
Yes, yeah. He said that. I was actually shocked.
So is it possible that we're not quite defining what equality is? That's what my concern.
I don't think so. I think that, you know, like Yemi and Kemi were saying, we're all very clear as to what it would mean, right, and why it's important. But as we're demonstrating, there is an entire faction that just doesn't believe that should be the case. And it's entrenched, yes, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
There's a little light, right, in which I would say that the younger generations coming up are getting a slightly different perspective because the women who are raising them are not conceding that we can't be equal. So there's a glimmer of hope, right? But it's still deeply entrenched.
Well, I think I should just go to the next question now. Although, I mean, we'll come back to this before we go. And it's this gender bill that has not been passed, right, since March 2016. So what does this say about the current state of parity? Would that in any way advance this needle movement that we have, Kemi?
I mean, if we're
able to pass that bill eventually. That's right.
Oh, no, I think so. I mean, presently, I mean, we've talked about the gap. We've talked about, as a result of this gap, where I would use women because they are my primary beneficiaries in this situation. Zelda made mention of a very fundamental fact about the social cultural practices and norms. But I think because of the problem, the shared multifaceted nature of this problem, one has to leverage on the influences and our unique experiences in a social cultural context. I mean, we are a low middle income country in Nigeria, and there is patriarchy, as Yemi rightly said. And so as a society, we have to set priorities to tackle the problem within that context. So when you say to me, can we, for instance, change the narrative or push the needle, like you said, Adeso, with bills like this, I think it will only help to frog leap and accelerate these changes in our timelines that we talk about. Because the way we're going, we just acknowledge it's going to take another 100 years for us to get to an equal playing field. If I want my children to at least benefit from this roadmap, then we must be able to treat each other with respect and offer equal opportunities to all. And this would bring an end to the violence against women and girls. So I believe passing a gender bill, with its representation and the protection of all Nigerians, especially girls and women, as a universal bill across all states, will play an integral role in accomplishing this.
Do you guys agree, Yemi?
I think that it's important to pass the bill because it's important for our law and our practices to be subject to a regulation which achieves equality.
In some ways.
In all respects, but you must begin. But I think that the problems we've identified with the passing of it and the delay and the various obstructions points to a deeper problem, which we have to fracture first. We have to first fracture this cultural adversity to women. It's a big problem. And curiously, something that from time to time I read about in the past, actually, this is only a colonial phenomenon. In the traditional history of Africa, women had leadership roles both in government, in society, in cults. But then the colonial intervention fractured the economic models on which we operated and created a situation where men
had to go out.
Of course, Victorian morality ennobled men. And that's what was brought to us by the English. But then men, you know, going to the office, they would look for the chief. They dealt in a patriarchy. The patriarchy came to us, in my opinion, from England.
Interesting.
But, and so, because in a traditional culture...
But we embraced it.
Of course,
it.
Sure. So the men have enjoyed it. Mm. And they can't... Men who like the senator who strikes somebody on his face, I'm sure in his family house, can't stand when his mother is speaking.
Absolutely, absolutely. Zelda, what do you think about what the laws would do?
I mean, I think it's an important step, right? Mm-hmm. Aside from having it codified, which is very important, because you'd be surprised the kinds of things that Nigerians don't know are against the law,
Correct. Right?
So it would be good to have it codified. The other thing is that it actually criminalizes certain behavior. Mm. Right? Mm. And if there's one thing that people understand, it's criminal sanction. Mm. So even though it may seem like a very harsh way to start, sending someone to prison, you know, for discrimination against a woman, if that's where we have to start, it's where we have to start, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. But the gender bill at the moment, the one that's under discussion, it's wide. It's not a long bill, but it covers so much that it would be a crying shame to never get it passed, you know.
So let's go back to this issue of equality as we round up, right? Because at the base of all of this is there's some disparity, which is causing the challenges that we have. And we've identified it as some kind of patriarchy, which we actually inherited, because traditionally in all African cultures, women were not really put down. So I wonder... Right. When we say equality, are we saying equal value, or are we saying they are the same? One, two people are one and the same. Let me start with Yemi.
Hmm. You know, the one of the foundations of modern law, modern constitution, is the Universal Declaration of the Rights of Man.
And that's man and woman.
Well, of course, but all men are born free and equal in rights, and men, of course. Women, although the genderization of the law means that they speak in terms of men. But it's a simple and a fundamental thing to appreciate that all mankind is equal. This covers discrimination on grounds of race, discrimination on grounds of religion, tribe, whatever, all the things that we use to discriminate against each other is a repudiation of the fundamental right of a man to be alive, to be free, and as the Americans put it, to pursue happiness. Now, this is not a remarkable thing. I think that if you accept that, I find it very difficult to discuss with people who say that they have some, I mean, it's false. The center says that it's against Islam. I've spoken with many Islamic scholars who dismiss yes, out of yeah. hand mm-hmm. his escape into religion to defend his misogyny, stance. As far as I'm concerned. And right. so I think that it's the idea of equality must be accepted. And, you know, one point, please, if I should not leave, is that political will and political power are moved by your taking political power. Women, if you're 51% of the electorate, why are we not having... As a matter of fact, women are the largest block of voters in fact.
So
not
Zelda.
Just registered. They go out to vote. Why do they vote for people who are going to oppress them?
Maybe we should be asking the women themselves. Why are we voting?
A lot of it has to do with the power structure, right? So you have a lot of women. Take, for example, where you actually have the most voters. It's not in Lagos. It's in the rural areas. Mm. That's actually where they come out to vote, right? Yeah. And those are usually the women who have less education, less financial independence, less means generally, right? So they vote in two ways. Either the way the men in their lives tell them, right? Or the way in which it's going to give them some kind of benefits,
advantage.
To put it that way, right? And that's their sad reality, you know? So there's so much in the entire structure that we need to pay attention to bring parity. So things like that is, if women are more empowered, then they have more independence in voting, which then has the knock-on effect of dismantling those patriarchal structures that you're talking about. You know, there's so much work to be done. And that's why when we look at the fact that the bill still hasn't been passed, it's really an indictment on the current state of gender parity. And, you know, it's discouraging in so many ways.
So the socioeconomic rights of women being enhanced is a means to bringing them into the seat of power.
Absolutely. And the bill will be one place to start. So I just want us to do our final words. Final words from you, Kemi.
No, I mean, I totally agree with both Yemi and Zelda. I mean, I'll add that it's fundamental, the equality conversation we're having. because of the direct consequence of that, mm-hmm. which is the subjugation of women mm-hmm. and the gender-based violence that I deal with every day.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, as Yemi rightly said, I mean, strong women, strong African women, strong Nigerian women are one that we're all familiar with in our homes, on the streets, mm-hmm. in our communities. Historically, we've had women from Calabar in the 1920s, there was the revolt. Mm-hmm. Abel Kuta women in 1940s, there was the revolt. Mm-hmm. Mobilization of women's groups is something that we're familiar with. But as you rightly said, Zelda, if the structure in place, both legal and otherwise, do not empower her to be able to implement her rights, this is where we are. So this has to change. And we don't change that narrative, we end up with more women that sadly are subjugated to violence every day in their lives.
Thank you, Kemi. And last words from you, Yemi?
Women have to fight for political power. They have to participate in the political process. And they have to move the needle by themselves.
Hmm. You think we can, Zelda?
I think we can. Power has never been given. It's always been taken. And I think that the Nigerian woman is very well poised to take it. Mm-hmm. But we need to be very aware of where that power lies and how we can exercise it.
So at the end of the day, it's all about us. You know, we've had these conversations, 5 conversations. Gender parity exists. But if the women are determined, they can cause the change. And definitely, the Gaia women are determined. That's why they've made this podcast possible. We thank you to the sponsors who've made this happen. And I say thank you to Kemi for signing in from the UK. Thank you to Zelda. Thank you to Yemi. And as we round up, these conversations just may continue. But for now, we must thank Pinnacle Oil Nigeria Limited for sponsoring these 5 critical conversations. My producer is getting me to round up, so I must go. They're critical, but then we're going to have the opportunity to do much more. So for now, we have talked about it. And as we round up here, patriarchy is not even our own, you people. Thank you for coming.
Thank you for
Thank you for listening.
Thank you for having us.